Hey, sports fans, it's world champion Andy Gepper, Mike North. Punch this number in your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over. 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419 for a free pick and info for the premier handicapping site in the country, Vegas Scores and Odds.com. It's the only site you'll ever need with expert handicappers like John Anthony, Denny Macklin, Tony Sacco, Ray Monahan, yours truly, and many more. Check out the homepage of Vegas Scores and Odds.com for a tote board with your buddy. Follow Vegas Scores and Odds on Twitter and dial up 1-800-808-3419. It's 1-800-808-3419, 1-800-808-3419, or go to VegasScoresandOdds.com.
The following program is suitable for all ages.
Buffoon. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffoon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffoon 55. The John Buffoon Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffoon 55, a fast-paced approach to Chicago Bears football analysis. I'm your host, John Buffoon, coming to you live Tuesday night, October 15th, over our Mixlr.com channel. Every week, we provide an in-depth look at the Bears' upcoming opponent, and here to help out with that analysis this week is John Sigler of the Saints Wire. He'll join us in just a bit. First, I want to welcome my producer and moderator, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, how you doing coming off the bye week?
It's been a long week. It's been a long couple of weeks, I should say. I'm ready for the Bears to get back out there and start playing, but I'm still kind of, you know, having that week off, you know, to watch like the poor officiating this week. It just kind of, especially last night in the Packers Lions game. What were your thoughts on that? My blood's still boiling.
You know what? Obviously, I didn't have a dog in the fight. I mean, I like to root for the Packers to lose, but it was awful. And you know, the blatant penalties that were not penalties being called. And I have an issue with people saying, well, if the Lions just would have taken care of business and would have scored instead of kicking field goals, then this wouldn't have been an issue. Since when do you have to win by 14 or 17 points to really, you know, make sure that the officials don't get in your way? I mean, ask Mike North, how many games per week are double-digit spreads? Not a whole lot. So it's hard to win in the NFL. So the fact that people are saying, well, if the Lions didn't, you don't let it go into the officials' hands. You take care of your business. And how hard is it to win by 14 points every week? Very difficult. Impossible. So, yeah, it's okay to blame the referees for this. You can't just say, well, if the Lions would have taken care of the business, the Packers wouldn't have got so many breaks. So I hate that. I hate that so much. Something needs to be done. We can have an entire show about this, whether or not referees should be full-time. I know a lot of them don't want to be full-time because they got other things going on. But this is ridiculous. And you're starting to really tick off fans. And I know that the NFL probably doesn't have their hand on the pulse of social media, and they may not care. But eventually, it's gonna piss enough people off that they're gonna turn the product off, because that was bad. That was really, really bad. And if that happened to my team, I would be furious. So I can't even begin to fathom what Lions fans are feeling. I mean, I Lions fans are sometimes, you know, I don't love them per se, but I feel for them. They should have won that game, and the refs took it away. So I don't want to hear about, you know, that's just part of the game, the human element. They're screwing up calls, and they're costing games, and they're actually – I said on Twitter last night, I love watching Monday night ref ball. That's real fun. I love watching flags hit the ground and, you know, dictate the outcome of a game. It's just it's enough. I can't take it.
And it especially stings with it, the fact that it's benefiting the Packers. I mean,
oh yeah,
how many games have they won this season because they've gotten those calls? I think it was like three games this year that they you know, they have three wins this year because of these calls. And it's, you know, as a Bears fan and in this NFC North where every win is precious, it's frustrating.
And I said this last week, I after every impactful play, whether it's a long run, a long pass, anything that, or a sack or anything that has any kind of impact on the game, you hold your breath because you're just waiting to see the yellow flag on the ground. It's almost like a miracle when something big happens and there's no flags on the ground. I don't want to say it's unwatchable because I'm going to watch it. So I'd be a hypocrite if I said I wasn't going to watch it, but it's becoming a product that isn't very user-friendly. It's not very viewer-friendly anymore because you're just saying, well, let's see what the refs have in stock for us this week.
And so hopefully we don't have any of those calls on Sunday in the Bears-Saints game. So I'm going to tell our new listeners how we've designed our show.
Great.
So we begin and end the show with five questions that you have 55 seconds to respond to. That's John's way of dedicating Buffon 55 to Doug Buffon, his uncle, who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. So, John, let's get the first five in the books, and then we will bring in John.
Let's do it.
So, major news from Hallis Hall on Monday as Matt Nagy announces that Kyle Long has been placed on season-ending IR, and it could very well mean that the 2013 first-round pick has seen his last action with the Bears. Your thoughts on the move to IR and what Kyle Long has meant to this organization? 55 seconds are on the clock.
Well, I can't say I was surprised. All the credit in the world to Kyle Long for, you know, gutting it out. But it was noticeable that something wasn't right. Let me correct that. It was obvious that numerous things weren't right. He was not moving well. He was getting pushed back. It was just obvious. As for his future, I don't see how they pick up his option for next year. He's a $9.6 million cap hit, and only about $1.5 million of that is going to be dead cap. So this could be the end of the road for Kyle Long. What's kind of sad is that people are debating on whether or not Long was a bust or not, and that seems kind of absurd to me. He was named to the Pro Bowl in each of his first three seasons. Yeah, he was put on injured reserve in each of his next four, but this is a guy who was legitimately the face of the team for a few years. When they were going through the doldrums of the Trestman and early Fox era, Kyle Long was it, man. His career was an absolute success, and he should be respected forever around the Bears organization. So, yeah, it is kind of sad to see him go out like this, but there's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, like you were saying, those first 3 years when Kyle Long was at his best, he was just a complete dominant force. And you know, it's sad, like, you know, we're remembering, you know, what's happening now, right? What have you done for me lately? And obviously Kyle Long is not the sole reason for this offensive line struggles, which Matt Nagy addressed at his press conference on Monday as well. Asked, what are the problems that have led to the Bears being the 29th team in rushing average at 3.4 yards per attempt? So I'll ask you, John, why is this run game so ineffective? The clock is running.
Well, I kind of wish someone would have asked him that question because that would make my job a lot easier. But it looks just like a different line than it was last year. How much of that has to do with, you know, Whitehair going back to guard and James Daniels going to center? I know there are very strong arguments for and against that move. You draft Daniels as a center. You draft Whitehair as a guard. He was inserted at center because of injuries. Remember Hieronymus Grasu? There's a blast from the past for you if you want to talk about busts. But good guy. But the counter argument is that you're so focused on fitting everyone into their natural position that you're sacrificing effectiveness. Now, I don't know. I don't think there's going to be a change there. That's just my opinion on it. I think they're committed to making this work. And even if it takes a year to gel, they're going to try to make this work. Whitehair obviously isn't going anywhere. He just inked a new deal. Daniels is under contract for another 2 years. So this will either work out well or it's just going to be a pretty regrettable failure. So is that the problem? Maybe. I think we're all just throwing darts at this point trying to diagnose the problem.
And the frustrating thing is this is the same offensive line. Obviously, Long is now in IR, but this is the same offensive line that last year, they looked pretty well. I mean, obviously, the run game, they struggled a little bit. But, you know, you're looking at just it looks like they're completely out of sync. And Long isn't the only problem. They need to find some way. Nagy, I hope, found some way. And Harry Hiestand found a way to fix this because, I mean, it's not solely on the offensive line, but, you know, it starts there. And they can really alleviate, you know, the troubles in the passing game and obviously as well as the run game.
Yeah, it's an enigma at this point. It's just I'm not sure why, because it's the same personnel, the same scheme. Why is it not working as well as it did before?
So the Bears now have three options to replace Kyle Long at right guard. Veteran Ted Larson, converted defensive lineman Rashad Coward, and practice squad, he was just signed to the 53-man roster today, Alex Bars. So what's your confidence level now at the position, and what can you tell us of any or all of these players? 55 seconds, start now.
Well, there's good news and bad news. The good news is Kyle Long really wasn't playing that well, so it's not like there's a massive hole to address. The bad news is we aren't positive whoever they plug in there is going to be much better. You know, Larson's a viable professional, 10-year vet. He did play a little defense in college. That seems to be our motto here. But then he moved to O-line. But he could be the most mentally ready to step into a full-time starting role. However, Larson's 32 years old. His contract's up after this year. He's not your future. Coward has been a project for the Bears for a couple of years. They had enough confidence in him making that transition from defense to offense. And maybe this is the next step in understanding where he's at. He's only 24 years old, 6'5", 326, looking like he's going to get the start against New Orleans. So we'll see what the kid has. As for Bars, I was a little surprised they didn't bring him up initially. They since have. They activated D lineman Abdullah Anderson. That probably had to do with the Akeem Hicks injury. But remember, Bars turned down a deal with New England to stay in Chicago. So maybe he foresaw something like this happening.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, Bars, it's nice that he's up on the 53-man roster now, even though he may not initially be the go-to guy. You know, if Larson's healthy, I feel like they go with him. And if not, Coward gets the, you know. But thinking back to that Vikings game, I think, where that offensive line looked the best, you know, right. Larson started out, and then he went out with the knee injury, and then Coward came in. So, I mean, again, it's not one guy that's going to make this offensive line go, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Someone needs to inject some energy somewhere because they're flat.
It might be you. When you come up to your pep,
maybe it's me.
Hopefully it's the offensive line because I feel like they need it.
Yes.
So besides the bad news about Kyle Long, it was just bad news. Just, oh my goodness, all week. The news wasn't too much better about former Saints player Akeem Hicks. So although Hicks has been placed on IR, he can return after 8 weeks, which Adam Schefter said is likely to happen. So the Bears had difficulty stopping the Raiders' run game without Hicks. Josh Jacobs ran 26 times for 123 yards. Tell us the options the Bears have here at defensive line and where your confidence level is with those options, and you have to do it in 55 seconds.
Well, there is good news here outside of, you know, Hicks going on the IR. Bilal Nichols could be back this week, which means the Bears don't have to dig super deep into the depth chart to put together a defensive line. So you have the potential of Eddie Goldman at the nose, Bilal Nichols at one end, and maybe Roy Robinson-Harris potentially at the other end. And, you know, like I said last week, Double RH has been making his presence known this season just a little bit. Had a season-high 4 tackles against Oakland. He's a constant disruptor. I talk about that a lot. And if you're not sure what I mean by that, I'm talking about a guy that can blow up plays or force quarterbacks or running backs out of their comfort zone, forcing players in directions they don't want to go, which, you know, can't be put in a stat book in any way. So you have a line of Goldman, Nichols, and Double RH. I mean, there's a lot of NFL teams that would be okay with that. That's pretty formidable. Clearly, there is a smaller margin for injury now. The depth chart is certainly being tested, and you can't replace an Akeem Hicks. But I think the line will be able to hold its own moving forward, and hopefully Hicks is back at some point. Maybe you rotate Nick Williams in there, who's flashed. I think for now, you're just hoping that the injury bug doesn't creep back up.
And I keep going back to, I know obviously the Bears defense, the last thought that we have of them is that game in London against the Raiders. But, you know, you think back to when Hicks was out and Nichols obviously out against the Vikings and what they were able to do with that pass rush, especially on the defensive line. You know, it's very encouraging moving forward.
They're one of the deeper squads in the NFL, but that's definitely being tested right now.
So the Bears defense is currently third in the NFL in points allowed per game at 13.8. They only trail the Patriots and the 49ers. But when you lose a Pro Bowler player like Hicks, the old saying is, everyone else needs to step up. Well, who on this defense would you like to see step up? Name one or as many as you can in 55 seconds. Go.
Well, I remember not too long ago I was on the Leonard Floyd bandwagon. I was super hyped and said Floyd could potentially have the best season of his career. But in the last two games, he's had total tackles. Let me look at one. Cue the Price is Right letdown noise. Where did he go? He hasn't had a sack since week one. Come on, Leonard Floyd. This is the time to step up. Get back to what worked against the Packers when he had two sacks. Gee whiz, if there was ever a time for Leonard Floyd to get humming, now would be it. But, you know, coming off the Oakland game, let's hope the bad tackling was just a jet lag problem. Let's hope this team is no longer covered in Vaseline or baby oil or whatever caused the Bears to somehow slide off everybody they were trying to tackle. So everyone on the defense should step up, or should I say wrap up, better this week. Let a 3-yard gain stay a 3-yard gain and not turn into an 8-, 9-, 10-yard play or even more. That being said, the defense is still really good. I'm not trying to overreact because they didn't look particularly good against the Raiders in a game 4,000 miles away from home. Let's see how this week goes. This is going to be a really good test to see where they're at. That being said, I would like to welcome our guest tonight, John Sigler of the Saints Wire, to the show. John, glad to have you aboard. How you doing?
Oh, doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I got to say, I was kind of having a flashback here after the NFC title game, the way you guys talked about the officiating for Monday night earlier. a lot of the mistakes we saw, that really resounded and kind of made me think back to last January and a lot of what was being discussed amongst Saints fans down here in Louisiana and Gulf South at large.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably are empathetic to that more than anybody. With the people down there on the bayou, they definitely understand everybody's frustration about about the referee situation. But you know what? I want to jump into the Saints. We want to understand it was kind of a know thy enemy kind of thing here. So let's just jump right into it. You know, the Saints, they've won four straight since Drew Brees' thumb injury, and in part they've done it with a pretty good quarterback play out of Teddy Bridgewater, a 7-2 touchdown to interception ratio. That's not bad for the former first rounder. So what's your analysis on Teddy Bridgewater? What is he doing well, and what are some of the things that, you know, he just can't do, or he can't do what Drew Brees does?
So far, Teddy has done a really good job of just staying out of the way and not making mistakes, kind of taking what the defense is willing to give him, and when the look is there, taking a deep shot downfield. He is a very accurate quarterback. He has an issue with throwing the ball a little high. That's very consistent with him. I don't know if he's being a little overcautious, trying to put the ball where only his guy can make a play on it, but it is an issue that pops up a lot, especially when the field gets condensed there in the red zone. The Saints have been talking him up for a while now as this starting quality quarterback, guy who stays cool in the huddle, manages things, doesn't really get rattled, and that's what we've seen. I mean, he stood tall in the face of pressure. He's one of the highest rated QBs against the blitz right now, and he looks the part as somebody who can play in this league.
Now, in your opinion, obviously nobody has a crystal ball and can predict the future. Do you think that he is the heir apparent to Drew Brees, or is Drew maybe going to be there for another 4 or 5 years?
I think there's a very realistic chance of that. I mean, Teddy, he's only 25, 26 years old. Brees, even before the thumb issue, just his whole demeanor had really changed over the last few years. I mean, a couple years ago, he was, you know, pounding his chest and saying, oh yeah, I'll play till I'm 45. And now it's a lot more, well, let's kind of wait and see. And now he's rehabbing his thumb for a few weeks already. And I think there's very much a scenario at play where Teddy ends up being the guy, if not next year, then within 2 or 3 years, totally.
And that's maybe why he turned down some of those gigs in Miami, where he kind of saw a passageway to being the starter in New Orleans instead. So it could be a bright future for Teddy Bridgewater in New Orleans. I want to stay on the offensive side of the ball, but I want to talk about Alvin Kamara. What's the latest on his knee? We kind of understand he practiced very little before Sunday's win over Jacksonville, but he also tweaked that knee during the game. If he doesn't play or has limited snaps, what have you seen out of the rest of the running back core that proves that they can be effective?
Yeah, AK's status is kind of odd. He had an ankle issue going into the game, missed a day and a half of practice leading up to it, and then early in the first quarter, a defensive tackle falls on his knee, and it starts swelling up the rest of the day. Now, he did stay in the game. He did finish it out, so it's not like this is a season-threatening injury or anything major, but by no means. That said, the Saints are very carefully guarding with their information on injury status, so we won't find anything out until the injury report comes out tomorrow for sure. But if AK does miss some time, look for the Saints to devote a lot of touches to Latavius Murray. He's a guy that you Bears fans would probably be more familiar with than me, honestly, because, you know, he played for the Minnesota Vikings the last few years. He had probably his best game as a Saint against the Jaguars on Sunday. I believe he had 79 yards from scrimmage. He had a 42-yard touchdown called back by kind of a weak holding penalty, but it is what it is. So he showed some of that big play ability that the Saints were very excited about when they signed him, and he looks like somebody who is very confident in his role within the offense. So I think they could totally rely on him for a week or two. Outside of him, they've got Dwayne Washington. He's kind of a special teamer more than anything else, but he is on the active roster. What's interesting is on the practice squad, they've got a Taquan Mizell. He's a former Bears receiver and running back, incidentally. And he's someone who kind of fits the Alvin Kamara mold of being this passing down specialist. So he's someone they could call up in the pinch if Kamara can't go for the here in the near future. But as of right now, I don't think there's any reason to suspect that he's going to miss this game.
Bears fans would love nothing more than to see Tyquan Mizell on the other end of a football game. Let's stick with that rushing attack. They're averaging they're the 19th ranked in the NFL in total rushing yards. What's your thinking on the Saints run game against the Bears, who have been very stout against the run? Might we see more emphasis on, you know, Sean Payton kind of going to the passing game, short swing passes, or is he kind of committed to making sure that you can establish a run game?
Payton is very interesting because he doesn't necessarily count strictly running plays whenever he's looking at how balanced the offensive attack is. He's one of these coaches who views those little four-yard routes into the flat as kind of extended handoffs, where you're still controlling the clock, you're still having that very efficient connection from the quarterback to the running back, and that's something that he likes to do to stretch the field out horizontally and kind of keep the defense on their heels a little bit. So even if the Bears are able to smother the Saints running game a little bit, I do think they'll still try and be effective getting and passing to the running backs, passing to the fullbacks even, doing whatever they can to keep the Bears flat-footed a little bit and just try and make life easier for Teddy Bridgewater.
Now, if you look at the passing attack, wide receiver Michael Thomas leads the Saints in targets with 67. Kamara is next with 39, and then no one else has more than 27 after that. Given those numbers, is it fair to conclude that Bridgewater kind of has an emphasis on getting the ball to Thomas and Kamara? And if Kamara can't play, who might we see kind of gobble up some more of those targets?
Yeah, so the receiving show has been Michael Thomas and nobody else, pretty much. the Saints have not really invested much at the receiver position, well, except for the $100 million contract they gave to Thomas. And so it's really a one-man show there. One player they have been excited about and seems to be picking about week by week is a veteran tight end, Jared Cook. He's someone they signed from the Oakland Raiders in free agency, and they spent the entire summer talking him up as this guy. He's going to reopen the Jimmy Graham part of the playbook that we haven't used in 5 years. Jared Cook, he's going to live down the seam. He's going to just add a whole new dimension to the offense. Well, he started out pretty slow. He had a bunch of drops, a bunch of timing issues. He was hurt for a stretch in training camp, and so he was a little rusty to start the season. But he has turned the corner here lately. Cook has caught 7 of his last 9 passes over the last 2 games. He's gained about 78 yards, I believe, and he scored a touchdown in each of his last 2 outings. So if the Bears can bottle up Michael Thomas a little bit and none of the other receivers step up, look for Jared Cook to continue to be that guy that the Saints look to on these third and long situations.
We'll return right after this quick message.
Talking to John Sigler of the Saints Wire here on Buffon 55. John, we just got done talking about the Bears' offensive line. Take us through the offensive line for the Saints and kind of let us know where the strengths and weaknesses may be.
Oh, man, I'm going to try not to sound like a homer here, but the Saints' offensive line is awesome. I mean, they have invested a ton of draft capital and financial resources into it. They've got several first-round picks on there. In a right tackle, Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin. I'm sure you guys have seen some of him in his Big Ten days. They've got Eric McCoy, the rookie center, has just been phenomenal at pass protection, and he's making strides in run blocking week to week. The left tackle, Teron Armstead, is probably the most physically gifted offensive lineman in the game. I mean, he still has the scouting combine record for the 40-yard dash. I believe he ran a 4.74 or something ridiculous like that at 310 pounds. But the weak link, to look out for, that's left guard Andres Pete. He's a former left tackle from Stanford. The Saints tried to make him fit at right tackle, and he flopped there. They tried to make him fit in at left tackle. He flopped there. So they kind of pigeonholed him at left guard a little bit, and he'll have good days and bad days, but this season he has really been the weak link in the chain there, and he's been the one that opposing units has kind of dialed in on and running more twists and stunts at him, trying to put him into a back pedal, and it's worked on occasion. The Bears have a very talented pass rush, and even without Akeem Hicks, and I think that's a matchup they can take advantage of.
All right, let's switch sides of the ball and go to the Saints defense. On defense, they have 18 sacks, placing them tied for 6th in the league. Who's producing those sacks? And typically, a blitz-heavy scheme that defensive coordinator Dennis Allen runs, or does he kind of create the pass rush with the defensive line? How are they able to get so much pressure?
So the story for years has been exactly that, that they've been a very blitz-heavy defense. They're having to manufacture pressure, sit in safeties and linebackers and is a lot of smoke and mirrors. That is not the case this year. The Saints have been, it's been kind of an underrated storyline with them, but they've been investing in their defensive line for a while. Now they've got four first-round draft picks on the first-string defensive line. You've got Cameron Jordan at one end, Marcus Davenport at the other, Sheldon Rankins and former New England Patriots nose tackle Malcolm Brown in the middle. Behind those guys, they've got other really impressive athletes, like Shai Tuttle is an undrafted rookie they found out of Tennessee this year. He's made some plays. David Onyemata is just been a terror there on the inside and from the three tech position. And, you know, they're almost running like a hockey team. I mean, too deep on along the defensive line. And so these guys are taking over games, making life hard on opposing quarterbacks. The Saints are still very effective when they do want to blitz, but they're being much more sparing in the number of blitzes that they're pulling out this year.
Let's go to the linebacking core. Kiko Alonso, a guy who's been traded a few times and always has some, you know, luster to his name. He was acquired via a trade with the Dolphins at the beginning of the season. How's he looked? And overall, kind of give us a lowdown on this linebacking core.
Yeah, so Alonso has kind of been the next man up over and over again. When the Saints traded for him, he was the fifth or sixth guy on the depth chart at linebacker, and now he's the third. They've had just a ton of injuries at the position. But right now, he is the third linebacker. He's a bit further down the depth chart. The Saints play a nickel defense as their base. So they have linebackers Demario Davis and A.J. Klein on the field for most of the game. Alonso will come in whenever they're in base sets or obvious run situations. But other than that, Alonso doesn't really get a lot of action. But the guy to watch is Davis, at number 56. He's a former Jets and Browns linebacker who just immediately took over the locker room when the Saints acquired him last year. And he's the vocal leader of the defense, the leader by example for the defense. He leads them in tackles almost every other week, and he is just a huge presence that the team has missed for, gosh, a decade now.
We're talking to John Sigler of the Saints Wire. Let's move back on to the secondary now. We counted three interceptions among the players in the secondary. Can you kind of take us around the horn and share whether or not there's an expectation for the secondary to create turnovers? What are some of the strengths there?
Yeah, those guys are, I mean, they're almost like battle brothers a bit. I mean, they're always trying to one-up each other. And if one guy gets an interception, then all the others want to go get their own interception and match his production. The guys to watch there, Marshawn Lattimore, it has really turned a corner in recent weeks. He's been kind of a high-variance player ever since he got to the league. But he's just been a lockdown, shutdown corner. He held Mike Evans from the Buccaneers without a catch 2 weeks ago. He held DJ Chark to 2 catches for 21 yards on Sunday, and Chark was fifth in the NFL in receiving yards going into that game. He did a great job neutralizing Amari Cooper on Sunday Night Football a couple weeks ago. I mean, Lattimore has just really turned the corner, and he's playing like possibly the best cornerback in football right now, not named Stephon Gilmore. So expect him to shadow Allen Robinson around the field on Sunday and really go toe-to-toe with him in man coverage. The other defensive backs, I mean, the Saints are going to be without their starting nickel and P.J. Williams. He's suspended the next 2 weeks from an offseason incident. In his place, look out for number 22. That's C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He's a rookie out of Florida who has just done a tremendous job of kind of assimilating himself to the style of play of the Saints walk.
Nice. And, I mean, this wouldn't be a Buffon 55 unless we went and talked about special teams a little bit. We never leave the third unit out of our preview. So what's happening with the Saints special teams through six games? Is this an efficient part of the team? Anything that needs improvement? Anything that Bears fans should be worried about?
Yeah. Don't really celebrate too much whenever you force the Saints to punt because Thomas Morstead has just come alive this year. He's been great ever since the Saints got him. He's the longest tenured player on the team besides Drew Brees, as strange as that may be to hear about the punter. But Morstead, he punted 6 times against the Jaguars on Sunday, and 5 of those punts fell within their own 20-yard line. He's just excellent at these coffin corner punts, setting up offenses deep in their own territory. I mean, he's a terror out there. And now, whenever the Bears have to punt, the Saints have a very exciting rookie punt returner in Deontay Harris. He went from the small school Assumption College up on the East Coast and playing in front of crowds of 2,000 people a week to playing in the Superdome in front of 70,000 people. And he has not missed a step. He's the NCAA all-time record holder for special teams touchdowns on kickoffs and punt returns, and that has transferred. through six games, he's already has the ninth most punt return yards in a single season in the Sean Payton era. I mean, he's just been sensational. He looks like Michael Lewis, the beer man. He's kind of a folk hero down here these days. But Harris has been a real asset for the Saints, and he's somebody who believes he has a chance to score a touchdown every time he touches the ball.
Oh, well, that's great news for us. big plays could possibly be on the horizon. Alyssa, I know you've been interacting with our Mixlr.com chat room. Any questions for John from our friends, and any from you?
Yes, I do have a couple of questions. Hey, John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Alyssa. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's talk Marcus Davenport. Is he living up to his draft selection? Because there's been a lot of debate here at the bar room about his value.
Yeah, so it's been a little frustrating to get to this point because he had such a quiet rookie year and he was injured and there were a bunch of excuses made. But here in year two, he has been just a monster out there. He still doesn't totally know what he's doing because he's played very sparingly out of a three-point stance, for example. But he is second on the team in sacks, leads the team in quarterback hits, and I believe Pro Football Focus has him on track to produce 96 pressures on the year. So he has just been a terror. They're rushing from the left end spot up against right tackles. It seems like once a drop in every possession, there's one play where he just picks up a 300-pound man and bench presses him, throws him across the field. It's nuts. So he's still kind of growing into himself. I mean, he's like 6'7", 280 now, I believe. So he's still kind of figuring out his abilities. But he is very much a presence in the game opposite Cameron Jordan, which is what the Saints haven't had throughout Jordan's career.
So even without Drew Brees, the Saints team is rolling at 5-1. Is there like one big reason why you think that, or is it kind of like a combination of many things?
I think it's a combination of a few factors. So they're playing great complementary football. The defense is getting off the field on third down. The special teams unit is putting the offense and special teams in great position, and the offense is avoiding mistakes, avoiding turnovers, and trying to make the most of their scoring opportunities. Now, it's been kind of hairy at times. They've played some very close games. They've had a bunch of one-score games here recently, but they found a formula that works for them, and so far they're just kind of proceeding with business as usual.
What do you think would be the biggest weakness on this team? How can the Bears attack the Saints and come away with a win?
Find a way to put the game on Teddy Bridgewater's shoulders. Make him have to come back from behind. Go up a score or two on him, pressure him, move him off of the spot, make him make throws on the run. Do whatever you can to make him go win the football game for you, because that's what the Saints are actively trying to avoid. They're doing everything they can to make Teddy go out and be a superhero and lead these fourth quarter comebacks and these game-winning drives and everything that we expect Drew Brees to do. If the Bears can find a way to do that, then I could very easily see this game go their way.
So obviously we talked a lot about the officiating in the beginning of the show, and that chat has been it's been ongoing in our chat room. So, John, what would you like to say to the officiating crew? I know, obviously, dating back to the NFC Championship game last year, if you could talk to them, what would you say to them?
Just get it right, guys. React to what you see in front of you. Don't second guess yourself. Don't take 10 seconds to throw a flag after the play is over, after Aaron Rodgers has been sacked. Don't wait until then to say, oh, there was a hands to the face on that one. Don't do that. If you see Tommy Lee Lewis get tackled out of bounds by Nikhil Roby Coleman, they're right in front of you, and you see one helmet smash into another helmet at 40 miles an hour, throw the flag. Like, they're making something that's very simple, very complex, by just dwelling too hard on the minutiae of the rule book and the procedures, and just taking a great game and they're just really making it into too much of a almost a bureaucracy is the word that comes to mind. It's just very frustrating as somebody who enjoys watching football to look up on the TV and see officials telling me that whenever Ted Ginn Jr. Gets both hands on the football and falls to the ground with it, that it's not a catch because the ball hit the ground while he had both hands on it. It's just kind of unbelievable.
Well, let's hope that we have any of those calls on Sunday in that game.
Hopefully.
Hopefully not.
All right, John, I want to thank you so much for your time. Before we kick you out of here, can you tell our audience where they can find your work and interact with you on social media?
Yeah, guys, hey, thanks again for the opportunity. Anyone who's interested look us up on saintswire.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John_Sigler. That's JOHN_SIGLER. Again, thanks for having me on the show, and here's to a great game. Hopefully the officials stay out of the way.
I hope so. And can we get a quick prediction out of you before we cut you loose?
Oh, man, I got to say, I think this is the game where Teddy's luck runs out. I think I'll say 19 Bears, 15 Saints.
Oh, you just gave us a kiss of death, John. Appreciate that. I know what you're doing. You said that voodoo stuff you guys got going on down there. I know what you're doing.
Hey, it worked on the Cowboys, man. We got to keep it going.
And you got the Pope on your side, too.
And the Pope's tweeting about you. You got everything going for you. But, hey, John, thanks so much for being on. We'll talk to you down the road.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
We'll return right after this quick message.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alec Lifshitz, a.k.a. Trey Busy, and I'm here to have a conversation with you guys about mental health. A lot of times in our communities, we don't talk about mental health enough, and it goes under the radar as a reoccurring issue. So I took the liberty to create the Let's Talk It Out podcast. This podcast was created to break the silence on mental health issues and to give a voice to those suffering. I have conversations with professionals in the mental health field as well as those who are suffering, and we break down different ways to stump stigmas and ways to cope with mental health conditions. The show is broadcasted live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on Mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. That's Mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. If you can't make the live recording of the podcast, then you can find the podcast available to you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Give the podcast a follow on Twitter and Instagram at LTIO Podcast on both platforms. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you guys in the future.
We now return to our program.
Okay, John, that music signals one thing. It is time for the second half of our B55 question. So let's get right into it. On Monday, Matt Nagy was asked what conclusions he came up with after self-scouting himself during the bye as he self-scouted himself. So he responded this way.
As the leader, everything starts with me, right? So with these players, with the coaches, it all begins there. I want to make sure that my personality and who I am never gets affected and never changes. And we talked about it. There's a lot of things that have gone on this year in the first 5 weeks of the season that didn't really necessarily happen last year in the first season. So for me, I got to step back and look at the 30,000 foot view for me as to where am I at right now and how can I help make my part. Make us better. And whatever that part is, whether that's X's and O's, whether that's leadership skills, communication, whatever that is. So I feel like I have a good grip on that. And so we'll see where that goes. But that's to me where it starts. And so I had a chance to do that.
So John, help the coach out. Is there anything that you'd like to have seen him address that perhaps he didn't mention there? Your 55 seconds start now.
Well, he talked a lot about teaching the line, overcoming adversity, and not making excuses. But I think what's on everyone's mind is what's being done to this offense as a whole. Are things going to get scaled back for Mitch Trubisky? Can we expect him to roll out or run the ball more? How do you generate more scoring drives and keep the defense off the field? Because through the first few games, maybe excluding the Washington game, this ain't it, man. Now, obviously, you're not going to spout off changes you're making in a press conference, so you really don't learn anything until you see the product on the field. Anything that's going to be noticeable isn't going to be publicly mentioned for the most part, maybe outside of inserting someone else into the starting lineup. But when it comes to press conferences, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to questions about game plans and attitudes and philosophy because it's all talk and words and coach speak. Coming off this, I just want to see what you did. I just want to see what you changed, and I want to see what this team will look like for the rest of the season. I never thought a bye week in week six would be as needed as it was, but it was a great time. They have a winning record, but they have things to change.
And like you said, you know, actions speak louder than words. So let's see what he does, what this team is able to do when they coming out of the bye, having 2 weeks to prepare for the Saints. With this offense, you know, potentially most likely getting Trubisky back, what does this offense look like? Does it resemble the one at this point last year or the one that we got in the first 5 weeks? So hopefully it's the former.
Yeah, I mean, where I'm at the point now where it's like, don't tell me, show me.
Absolutely. And so Nagy, again, talked about how proud he was of the entire team because they handle criticism really well. Is there anyone on Nagy's coaching staff that you'd like to single out and offer a little constructive criticism? Shouldn't hurt too bad, given you've got only 55 seconds. Go.
I'm going to go Harry Eisen kind of sticks out. The criticism was well stated. The offensive line isn't getting the job done. They can't run the ball for beans. Now, that can't be more obvious to anyone than it is to Harry. The guy has been coaching offensive lines for 35 years. He's been coaching offensive lines longer than I've been alive. So you would think if someone's qualified to shore up this line, it's him. But with that treasure trove of knowledge, he needs to figure this out. Figure out what you have, diagnose why it's not working, and find a way to make it better. Like I said before, you got to play the cards you're dealt. So the Bears absolutely have to find a way to run the ball. If this run game is stalling out, then you put more pressure on a quarterback position that isn't exactly capable of carrying the entire load right now. And I think that I'm putting that nicely. So I hope Harry looked over this line's film and saw some tendencies. Hopefully he's using this week to turn them into a bunch of crazed dogs ready to bulldoze some running lanes, because this has to be fixed or it's going to be a pretty big concern moving forward.
And obviously the current concern does fall on the offense. And I have to agree with you, Stan. He's, this is a big week for him. This is why they brought him in here. And especially looking at the product last year compared with this year, and you're wondering, especially with the same personnel, what happened? Why the drop off? So this bye week, hopefully this gave him enough time and Nagy to, they got to shore up this line.
I hope they found the answers, because I got nothing.
So the Bears are 3-2 as we go into week 7. Last year, the team was 3-3 after 6 weeks, and then they went on to win 5 in a row. Given that, how much reality, how much of a must-win game is this upcoming match against the Saints? Does your gut say that the Bears can replicate what they did last year if they lose Sunday? 55, go.
Well, I'm no Punxsutawney Phil, but I'm going to do some prognosticating here. If they lose Sunday, which I still believe is a very winnable game, let's look over their next 5, which would replicate their success last season. In Week 8, they get the Chargers at home, a team that just lost to a third-string quarterback and an underachieving Steelers team. Then they go on the road to Philly, who I think I have a tryout at cornerback for next week. They made Kirk Cousins look like Joe Montana. Then they host the Lions. Divisional games are always a toss-up, and Detroit is better than we thought, but that's still a winnable game. Then they go on the road against the Rams, a team that just lost 3 straight games and has their own problems going on. Then finally, they host the Giants, a team with a rookie quarterback and questionable offensive weapons outside of Saquon Barkley. So yeah, that's fully possible. Now, last year in that 5-game stretch, they beat the Jets, the Bills, the Lions twice, and the Vikings. So that might have been slightly easier last year, but going into this season, we kept hearing about how hard the Bears' schedule is and how much harder it was than last year. But some of these great teams the Bears have to play aren't playing like world beaters right now.
And right now, it does look like their schedule that once seemed like it was going to be incredibly tough is a little bit easier. But then again, any given week in the NFL, you don't know what's going to happen. They can't have a repeat performance with this Raiders game. So hopefully, the schedule does look a little bit easier, but they have to come out strong. It's doable, but, again, I'll believe it when I see it. I first need to see what they do against the Saints, before even, considering them pulling off 5 straight with that schedule.
Yeah, and I'm sure the other teams are looking at the Bears not as, not as harshly as they were before, because they see there's some holes in the armor there. So I'm sure the other teams are looking at the Bears and thinking, well, maybe that won't be as tough as we thought. So, it goes both ways.
Absolutely. So taking a look at the matchups against the Saints. So what makes you feel good and what gives you some concern? You've got 55 seconds.
Well, a few things are looking like potential good matchups. The Saints are the 14th best run defense, giving up about 102 yards per game on the ground. Maybe this is a good launching point for a refreshed Chicago offensive line. Also, they're 19th in the league in rushing offense, only have 2 rushing TDs. That's also how many the Bears have. But it's possible that the Bears could make the Saints one-dimensional and can possibly create some turnovers, especially if Kamara's not in there. What I don't like, take everything I just said and basically reverse it, because I'm sure the Saints see the Bears' abysmal rushing numbers and believe that they can make Trubisky one-dimensional and create turnovers. Now, if Kamara does play, he's a scary matchup problem for anyone if he has the ball in his hands. 33 receptions already. Screen and swing passes can be a killer. But if he doesn't play, that's a huge break for the Bears, which we already kind of talked about. Teddy Bridgewater is crazy efficient, 3 games of 70 or better percent completion percentage. He's not going to set the world on fire, that's for sure. But he could nickel and dime the Bears to death if they let him.
So kind of going back to week 3 against the Redskins, the offense, the Bears are able to put up 31 points, right? With help from their defense, obviously. Do you think that this is a game or any game like within the next upcoming few games, do you think that this Bears team can put up another 30 points?
Well, I think they're going to have to at some point, because you can't expect the defense to just keep everybody under 13 or 16 points every week. Eventually, when you have an offensive-minded coach who is apparently supposed to be able to scheme with the best of them and put personnel into where they're supposed to be, eventually you got to have a game where you score 30 points. This is the NFL. These are professional football players. You're not going to win every game 13 to 10 or 16 to 9. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, in one of these games, you better score 30 points. And sometimes you're going to have to put 30 points up on a good team like the Saints. So this would be a great time coming off the bye week to be able to have 2 weeks to scheme for this team to really show that this was worth all, you know, that this whole week that you were working hard on that and you made the changes that were necessary. So, yeah, I would expect a big offensive production out of this team this week, because they have to. They have to show something at some point.
And kind of switching over to the defensive side, you know, we talked about Leonard Floyd a little bit. Do you think that, because he's been very quiet, like you said, you know, since that Packers game, we were like, oh, this is a breakout year. Look at what he's going to do. And, you know, he's been quiet. Do you think that this could be a game where, you know, he could get back at it?
You hope so. I mean, Leonard Floyd is just kind of unpredictable at points. There's times when I watched him against the Packers, I was so juiced up. He wasn't just using his athleticism, but he looked like a bully. He was using power moves. He was running guys over. But and then, you know, he disappeared. I don't know where he went. And so I would love to say that, but am I going to predict that? Absolutely not, because, you know, history shows us that probably isn't the case. So I would love to see Leonard Floyd get back on track. He's one of the guys that needs to step up, especially with Hicks out. Obviously, you know, they're different positions, but if he could get some pressure coming around the edge, that would be a big boost. So I would love to say it. I would love to see it. Would I, you know, bet the farm on it? Nah, I wouldn't.
So JD in the chat room just asked, is Trey Burton still on the Bears? So tight end is obviously another big concern for this offense. Do you have any reason to be optimistic that, you know, that they're going to be more involved, especially Burton and Shaheen?
Well, I perked up a little bit when I heard about the O.J. Howard rumors, which I think are just rumors at this point. I don't think there's any truth to that, or maybe there's some grumblings about that, but I don't think that they've progressed any further than just that. But you'd love to see the tight ends get involved, but, you know, we have been saying that since, you know, last year. If history tells us anything in the last two seasons, I wouldn't expect all of a sudden Trey Burton to come out like a house on fire with 8 receptions for, you know, 80 yards and a touchdown. Shaheen, I don't know. I mean, he's going further and further down into that disappointment level where it's just like, oh man, we invested a lot in this guy, but he can't stay healthy. And, you know, whenever you get that hurt that early in your career, you're not really allowing yourself to progress in the game, especially a kid that had played at a small school, was a basketball player. You got to be on the field to get better, to progress. You're not getting better in the trainer's room. That's not his fault. He's just getting hurt. So you'd hope that he could stay on the field long enough to progress. But no, the tight end position is one of the worst on this team. There's no way getting around that.
While tight ends could use a boost, they are not the subject of our Buffon boost. We learned over social media that Charles Leno got some great news recently. He's going to become a dad. So congrats to him and his wife, Jennifer, from us at Buffon 55. Unfortunately, Charles Leno has been blasted by Bears fans on social media for his play, which has without question failed to match how he played a year ago. Charles needs the Buffon boost, John. Please let him have it.
Charles, I hope the bye week treated you well, man. I hope you're able to physically and mentally recharge. I hope you had a solid mindset, kind of a reboost in yourself. Hope you feel good going into this week. I know things haven't been great this year. Hasn't really been great across the line, literally. Look, Chicago fans know how capable you are of playing this position. I assume that's why they're showing some frustration, not with just you, but with the entire team. But your team still has a winning record and a mentally strong core of veterans. Now, you lost one of those guys this week with Kyle Long heading to the injured reserve list. So now, this line needs leadership. This line needs you. Now is the time to flip that switch and become the snowplow that's needed to clear lanes when the weather turns cold in Chicago. Everyone is waiting for the breakout moment for this offensive line and for this team. Now is the time. Turn up and bear down. Okay, every week I give you my prediction to the game, and so far I'm 3-2, just like the Bears. So I am really, really intrigued by this game. I cannot wait. maybe it's because I haven't seen the Bears in action for a while, but I want to see what went into this bye week. Call me a homer, call me unrealistic, call me whatever you want. I don't care. I'm waiting for the talent to come out in full force. I think this could be the week. I think the Bears find a running game somehow. I think the Bears hit a few big plays. I think they end up defending Soldier Field. I think they beat the Saints 26-23. Once again, I want to thank John Sigler of the Saints Wire for coming on the show tonight. Remember to follow me on Twitter at JDBuffone, and make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom and on the Facebook page. Alyssa, tell our listeners where they can find your work and contact you on social media.
You can find my work over at BearsWire.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri. I also want to tell those listening to us live on Mixlr.com that in just a few minutes, we've got two more shows coming up. Fantasy Football Goon with Joe Mandel, who is also known as Joey Two Scoops, and John Santucci, a.k.a. The Tooch. They will welcome fantasy football legend Spaceball, and the three will get you prepped for week six. Seven. Oh, my goodness, I just went back in time. Week seven.
Hey, I don't want to live through week six again. That was a bye week.
I don't want to. No. So that's followed by Shy Fans in the Stands with Greg Braggs and Joey Two Scoops. Those two shows, along with this one, will be available on podcast format, so make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right, and sign up on our Mixlr.com channel for email updates on all of our live show. We'd love to have you in our chat room. It's all absolutely free to sign up for. We hope you join us live and interact. And if you listen to us on the podcast, please leave us a review. That helps us out immensely. But that will do it for us tonight, Barflies. We'll see you next week.